Happy New Year, and welcome to our first episode of Hoka Journal of 2018. I know that as we settle into this new journey, we find ourselves rethinking and reconsidering all aspects on our life. Well, if you are finding yourself there right now, listen to what Fred Hughes, the director of the jazz band, has to say.
It reminds me when I get to be with these folks why I do this is that they really love playing music, and they're doing it because they love doing it, and they enjoy doing it together.
New Year's is also a good time to start new business ventures or modify the social causes of the ones we are already part of.
So we started off as a local community events company. Our intention was to bring local businesses and local charities into the community, make people more aware of it.
And New Year's is also a time for celebration, and Hoka Polizzo is ready to party with their annual Irish evening in February.
Most people associate Irish people with St. Patrick's Day, green beer, green hair. I even saw a green dog my first year in Washington, D.C.
These stories coming up in today's episode of Hoka Journal, starting right now. Hi, and welcome to Hoka Journal, the show where we highlight the unique and interesting people, businesses, nonprofit organizations, and events happening right here in Howard County. I am your host, Cris Oviedo. The power of good literature is stronger than any words I can express. The written language can transform cultures, move masses, educate, provoke emotions, take us on a journey through time and space without ever leaving the room. But above all, it expands the horizons of our heart and our soul, and it invites us to look at an infinite world of possibilities, people, and circumstances. Howard County is very, very fortunate to have an organization that looks to highlight the best of literary work, and it continues to bring some of the most prominent authors right into our area. It is with great pleasure that I have three members from Hoka Polizzo joining me in studio today, and I'll start by introducing Susan Thornton Hobby, and she is a board member for Hoka Polizzo. And Susan, I'm actually going to let you do the honors and tell us who else is here in studio with us today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. So today we have Patrick Kennedy, who founded the Irish Evening for Hoka Polizzo 40 years ago. And then we also have Catherine McLaughlin Hayes, who took up the mantle of chairing the event in 1985. So how many years is that, Catherine? Oh, wait, I'm asking math. Don't ask math to a literature person. Okay, so a long time. You've been chairing the Irish Evening for a long time.
32 years.
Now, Hoka Polizzo, it's an organization here in Howard County. It's kind of like one of those well-kept secrets, I feel, in a way. So why don't we tell everybody first what Hoka Polizzo is all about?
Sure. So Hoka Polizzo stands for the Howard County Poetry and Literature Society. It was founded in 1974 by Ellen Conroy Kennedy to bring a little culture to this new little town of Columbia. And we've brought Nobel winners, Pulitzer Prize winners, National Book Award winners directly to Howard County audiences for 40 years. And we're very proud of the people we've managed to bring. We tend to think of ourselves as the literary mouse that roared. We are a little organization that has brought great writers to Howard County. Pat, you want to elaborate on that a little bit? You've been here for so long and seen so many of these amazing writers.
Well, as you said, Nobel Prize winners, 5 Nobel Prize winners, including Seamus Heaney, Saul Bellow, Isaac Singer, and so on. Poets laureates of the United States Poets Laureates have come. And Hoka Polizzo is one of the oldest and most distinguished literary and arts organization in Howard County.
So why was it important to create an organization like Hoka Polizzo in a county where arts is very, very vibrant, right? Why was it important to have an organization that focused on writers specifically?
Well, I believe that was Ellen's dream. Her vision was Ellen Conroy Kennedy, when she founded Hoko Palitzo. She came from New York City, and she was used to having a vibrant literary scene. And it wasn't here yet, so she invented it. She invented it for us. And we're very grateful because, yes, Howard County has amazing arts, but no one does literature for Howard County like Hoko Palitzo.
And so let's talk a little bit more about that. What is so unique about Hoko Palitzo?
Well, the writers are very distinguished, but they come from all over the world. They've come from China, Israel, Iran, England, France. I forget how many countries, but I've just scratched the surface. And the best writers of all of those countries have come here. And the audience and the writers are represent a very diverse group of people, all races, religions, ethnic, and their literary quality is the tops. The National Endowment of the Arts said Hoko Palitzo was the ideal community arts organization. So wow. It stands tall.
Absolutely. That's quite a title. So it's as an art appreciator, I guess, it's where I'm going to place myself today, right? So it's easy to... reading is one of those things that you either like, right? And as a kid especially, I mean, I know that we're trying to get our kids to read more and more and more, but it's one of those things that you really feel as a person like, well, either I really like to read or I just don't like to read, right? What does reading, right, and specifically good literary work like the ones that you guys are promoting and are putting out there, what does it do for a person like me, right? Like somebody who is an art appreciator, I'm not able to create or write anything like that. But reading, what does reading do for me, right? So that we can maybe entice people to go and read more of these works.
Right. Well, that's a good question, Chris. Reading and literature, and especially hearing authors from particular countries, lets you be an armchair traveler. You can be in someone else's life through a book or through a poem. Even, I mean, we've had people come who've read poems that are three lines long that will transport you immediately into their life or into the lives of others that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to see or think about. So that's the way I think of it. Also, Martina Spada, who is a poet we had come read for us, he explains that poetry can save people's lives. He's seen it happen in prisons and in high school. We have a lot of youth programs. We bring actual writers into the schools to let people see that literature isn't something dead on the page. It isn't something that's static. These people are writing right now things that people care about.
And I love that you said that because many times, you know, especially I think in our culture today, we feel that, well, if it's a good book, it's going to make it into a movie, right? Mm-hmm. Like one of the most recent movies that I really, really enjoyed was Wonder. And that was based off of a book that actually my children have read. And I have to say, though, there's something missing, right? When we watch a movie that has been adapted from a book, because there's so many details that you can get when you're reading a book, but there's no way to translate that into a movie, into the screens. So that makes, I think, literature that much more special. So with that thought in mind, what is the mission, maybe, or the vision for Hoko Palitzo here?
What's the mission? To bring great writers, great poets, great novelists to the county and enrich the literary scene here and excite people about the books that they may not have read yet but want to read, having met and heard the author talk about it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And the vision, where does Hoko Palitzo see itself going in the next few years?
Well, we hope to continue bringing amazing writers. We're we're expanding into digital. We have a television show that we produce with these amazing writers. We have the longest interview with Gwendolyn Brooks, a phenomenal poet from Chicago. We have the longest interview ever done, and that television show is currently hosted on the Library of Congress's website. We capture these amazing writers, and we put their words and their craft accessible to everyone on YouTube. So these shows are a great resource to writers, to scholars, to even students. They're really terrific, and we're very happy to commit those to the World Literature's resource.
That is fantastic. So let's dive right into the event that it's coming up in the month of February, and that it's called the Irish Evening. So can we tell everybody what the Irish Evening is all about?
Well, it's a celebration of Irish culture and music and poetry. How I started doing this was Pat, as Susan mentioned, Pat Kennedy was the one who started the Irish Evening, and then Jack Farrell took over for a few years. And when Jack was ready to retire or go stop it in 1985, I think it was, he nominated me, and I was very reluctant because I had young kids at the time, and you know, where will the time come from? And while I enjoyed the literature and getting into it, I was a scientist in my previous life. It was an opportunity to delve into this, and Ellen backed them up, and you know, backed Jack Farrell up and said, oh yeah, she can do it. So I started, and I thought it was a good opportunity for me to, and when Susan was mentioning about why Ellen started Hoco Palizzo, it was the same, and I didn't think of it until right now, it was the same reason that I wanted to do the Irish Evening. I wanted to educate or inform people on Irish culture. And as a young student, graduate student in DC, most people, and in science field, most people associated Irish people with St. Patrick's Day, green beer, green hair. I even saw a green dog my first year in Washington, DC. And we used to, there were very few Irish people in Washington, D.C. at the time. And the few that were, we'd snigger about, you know, God, can you believe the green dog and green hair and this? And it was totally alien to what I was used to. And I was only here about 6 weeks at my first St. Patrick's Day. So it was kind of vaguely, looking back on it now, I wasn't offended at the time, but it was kind of vaguely offensive that this is all people associated, green beer, green, you know, with Irish people. And I remember starting going to, at the University of Maryland, College Park. I used to, any time I'd see a little literary thing, I'd sneak off and go and try and hook up with the literature. And then when I started doing it, I thought it was an opportunity to, like I said, inform people that we were more about our music, our poetry, our literature, and not green beer. And so it took off from there. And the first year, Sean O'Tooma, I believe, he was a professor and English writer from University College Cork who had sponsored a wonderful writer who writes in Gaelic, Nuala Ní Gonal, who we had later. And it was so enjoyable, and it was a music, and it was the readings and the music, and they so were so intertwined, you know. And the response was incredible. Of course, we already had the foundation from the previous few years, but the response was incredible. And then we moved on to Evan Boland. That was such a treat. She's internationally known. She's just not an Irish poet. She's internationally known, and she's at Stanford right now, I believe. But she came in the middle of a snowstorm and read for us, and that's why I started doing it, if that was your question.
Yes, absolutely. And so can we paint a picture? I know you kind of did, you paint a picture of what that first evening was like, but can we paint a picture for people for the upcoming evening? Has it evolved much from that first night? Are there many different things happening now?
Yeah, well, it's run on its reputation, really. It's kind of an annual event. It has a kind of a seasonal right in Howard County. People come ask me every year, when is the Irish Inn? Who are you having this year? We don't want to be on vacation in Florida because it's always in February, and that's when people escape to Florida, and they usually look forward to the combination of the writing, the music. We have a harpist, superb harpist, and he starts out the evening, and then we have the writer, and we have the music, which is wonderful, and it's all a wonderful combination. It's all blended together.
Don't forget the bar, Catherine.
Oh yes. that was leaving out that bit. We have Irish coffee and beer and wine and everything. And Susan,
we but have a great not st- green, as we said. All
no,
right.
No green, not green. No, green no. is banned. No.
But we also have step dancers, and we sell scones and all of the books from the authors. It's a really festive evening. It's become a kind of, mm-hmm. it's kind of a seasonal ritual. You know, people are now bringing their children and their grandchildren who have come for many, many years. And then we also have incredible newcomers who come and say, oh, I didn't have any idea this was happening. Mm-hmm. And the author this year, Mike McCormack, wrote a book called Solar Bones that won the Goldsmiths Prize for Daring Fiction. Fantastic. The Guardian called it an extraordinary hymn to small town Ireland.
He was shortlisted for the Booker, or longlisted for the Booker Prize.
Longlisted for the Moore mm-hmm. Man Booker Prize, that's mm-hmm. right. So he'll be doing the main reading to kick off the evening. We usually have the Irish ambassador come out mm-hmm. As well. It's a real treat to see everyone gathered.
And the Irish ambassador said, the writers that Hoko Palizzo brings to Howard County reads like a who's who in Irish, contemporary Irish literature, the best of the best. And Irish literature is known for mm-hmm. being an extraordinary accomplishment.
Well, and I was going to ask you, why Irish? Why not any other place? And I know you kind of touched a little bit on maybe it was trying to change that green idea that we had about Irish culture, but was there anything else specific about the Irish literature that made you guys decide on making this about the Irish evening? Why not, I don't know, the South American evening or something mm-hmm. like that, you know? Why is it the Irish evening?
Well, it need not be restricted to Irish literature. For years, I thought we should have an evening of great poets and writers from the Harlem Renaissance. And being in the Depression, we would serve bathtub gin and have Langston Hughes and all the others interpreted by contemporary actors. But Irish literature and music really stands out very especially as having a huge canon and excellent writers, Nobel Prize winners and others, to bring here. So that was the start.
And also, Ireland has a long history of great writers like James Joyce and George Bernard Shaw and Brendan Behan, and yeah, it goes way back further than that. You know, I was asked to read at the college the other day an Irish poem, and a poem in Gaelic written in English, and I came up with something I learned as a child. It was kind of the equivalent everywhere. It was like William Butler Yeats's Lake Isle of Inishree is to the Lake Isle of Inishree is to William Butler Yeats's this one, Anthony O'Rafferty. He was a blind Irish poet from the 1600s, and I have that poem in my head ever since then. It's kind of in the DNA of the Irish to be poets and writers, mm-hmm. and it's just you can't describe it. It's kind of in your genes, I suppose. And I think rightfully Pat made a good decision to choose an Irish evening. That's a biased opinion, but we have a great, I'm very proud of the great history of, and with regard to the music, very often our writers tune into a play, the, like Kieran Carson a few years ago played music, played a, and Frank McCourt, who we also had, he and his brother used to do a musical thing. So it's all intertwined. It's inextricable. You know, it's really all tied up together. So, like I was thinking that I was read someplace that you, when you come to America as an immigrant, you come with a small package, but a head full of music and words and poetry that, you know, that fills you. And it keeps you going until you get settled here, which it certainly did for me.
That's wonderful. So before we run out of time, can we tell everybody where they can go get tickets for this event?
Of course. The event, again, is on February 9th. 2018 at Howard Community College in the Smith Theater. And for tickets, people can visit www.hocopolitso.org. And that's HOCOPOLITSO.org. And look for the link there. We're so thrilled to have Mike McCormack. This book, Solar Bones, is written in one sentence. It's one sentence, an entire novel in one sentence. It's really a tour de force. And it's all about everything that goes on in this civil engineer's head in a small town in Ireland. And it's written in one, it feels like it's one breath. And there's a little twist in it that I can't reveal.
No spoilers.
But I'll just say that the twist will take your breath away when you realize what's happening. And it seems like an ordinary life that this man is telling it, but he's telling it in an extraordinary way.
Wow, it sounds very enticing. So for everybody, February the 9th, mark your calendars. Go to hocopolitso.org. Hocopolitso.org to find out more information about Hocopolitso, about the event, and now about everything that Hocopolitso does. So is there anything else you guys would like to tell our listeners before we wrap this conversation up today?
Just that we've had an extraordinary history of Irish writers. Frank McCourt, Seamus Heaney, Nuala Fáil, and Evan Bolin. We have a reputation that precedes us in Ireland.
And many of the writers told me that if in Ireland, if the word is if Hocopolitso asks you to read, say yes. Just don't ask any questions. Say yes. So we've been running on that for some years.
Wow, that says a lot about Hocopolitso. Thank you guys for coming into our studio today.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for having us.
For Hoca Journal, I'm Chris Oviedo, and we'll be right back.
Teen Health Matters, airing every Tuesday at 5:30 and Sunday at 12 noon on Dragon Digital Radio.
And one of the things that I hold as a tenet is that every young person deserves to have, as a right, an activated and engaged adult throughout childhood, adolescence, and into young adulthood.
You can take us with you by downloading Dragon Digital Radio on the iPhone and Android App Store.
For HOCO Journal, I'm Alex Baker. The Columbia Jazz Band is in its 28th year and performs a diverse mix of jazz as well as blues, Latin, swing, standards, and pop at concerts and dances throughout the greater Washington, D.C. area. With me here today to talk about the Columbia Jazz Band is their new director, Fred Hughes. Fred, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
All right. So just first question we'll start off with is for people who may not be aware of, this is the first time they've ever heard of the Columbia Jazz Band, just tell us about what you're all about.
The Columbia Jazz Band is an organization of community members that enjoy playing big band jazz music. So for your listeners that might not even know what that means, there are several forms of jazz in the genre that is jazz, and that's, you know, small group jazz, and then there are, like the Columbia Jazz Band, larger groups of anywhere to 18 to, in our case, we have close to 25 people in the group, in a big band setting, and that's what it was called in the early days of big bands or stage bands. So we mostly cover music that was originally done by, say, the Count Basie Band, the Ellington organization, so on and so forth.
And so you also do, looking at you do a lot of other stuff too. Like I noticed you, it looks like you do blues and, you know, Latin music. So is that sort of kind of variations on jazz? So with blues, you might do somebody from like, you know, Etta James or Billie Holiday or one of those?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And actually, you know, it's, I guess to the layperson, it's probably a little confusing as to when you say jazz and then you say blues. Actually, blues is also a form, in other words, a certain amount of measures of music. So it's not necessarily a genre. It's also a form of music that is performed, a certain chord progression and so on and so forth. So when we just write down blues, I think sometimes people think of more of, you know, guitar, harmonica type thing versus there's actually a form of music called the blues. So there's probably a little bit more about it than you wanted to know, but yeah. As far as adding the other styles of music in that, I think jazz has become such a broad genre of adding different styles and fusing different things into it. So yeah, some of the arrangements that we may play are more Latin infused with rhythms from Latin America, bossa nova, and then, you know, venturing into some more of like the funk and R&B type grooves that are out there. So yeah, we try to mix it up in our concerts with as wide a swath of music as we can.
Yeah, sounds like there's a bit of something for everybody.
We'd like to think so.
So tell us a little bit about sort of how the makeup of the band. How many people are in the band, and, you know, what are all the different instruments? You said it's a big band, so, I mean, I'm assuming you got, like, drummers and saxophones and probably other instruments?
Correct. So the standard makeup of a jazz big band or swing band or stage band, whatever the different names that has been called throughout history, includes trumpets, trombones, saxophones, and a rhythm section. Usually it's between 3 and 5 trumpets, 3 and 5 trombones, and then in the sax section you usually have 2 alto, 2 tenor saxophones, and a barry saxophone. And then in the different arrangements that a jazz ensemble will do, it's called for that those saxophone players also are able to double on flute, clarinet, bass clarinet. So that's the makeup of the horns, and then the rhythm section is guitar, bass, piano, and drums. And so we happen to have in our organization a little bit extra folks added in there in the trumpet section and the trombone section to fill things out. So we're about 25 members when we added everybody in there, and we also have 2 vocalists that work with us as well.
And so tell us a little bit about what you, because this is your first year, tell us a little bit of what you do as the director of the jazz band. Is it kind of like, you know, a conductor of an orchestra where you make sure everybody's on the same pace and that the, you know, everybody's staying in tune, or is there, I imagine there's probably a lot more than that.
Well, you know, the history of this music is that usually, if you think back to the days of Count Basie and Duke Ellington, both of those folks were piano players. So not only did they kind of conduct the band, but they played in the band. So my role, as I see it, is that I really am the person that helps pick the music, picks the programs, and then rehearses the band. And as I tell the band, when we get on stage, I'm kind of standing over to the side and enjoying the concert myself, because then my work's kind of done. I count tunes off, and tunes that might need me to direct, I'll do that. But for the most part, on a concert, I'm more of an MC-type person than I am an active part of the band. My role is really in getting in there in rehearsals and you know, sculpting the sound and getting us to where we want to be musically. And then, of course, as I said, picking the programs.
And so since you're still pretty new to this, the Columbia Jazz Band, so what made you want to not only choose the Columbia Jazz Band, but choose this profession as as the director?
Well, I'll answer the first part of the question. Is they chose me, actually. One of my really close friends and was their director for 10 years, I believe, Pete Barenbrig. Mm-hmm. Pete moved out of the area, and the band then had another good friend of mine, Jim McFalls, in charge of the band. And Jim's the assistant director of jazz studies at Towson, and his position there required him to be up there a little bit more than he could give the time to the Columbia Jazz Band. So they asked me to come in and take over for Jim. So in my profession as a professional musician, I this conducting and so on and so forth is something that I do. I travel for a while. I was the conductor for the Three Mo Tenors and then Cook, Dixon, and Young. So I traveled around the country doing, you know, orchestras and so on and so forth. So it's that type of thing has been in my wheelhouse for quite some time. When the Columbia Jazz Orchestra jazz band got in touch with me, they asked if I had time in my schedule to make this work. And I've known about the band because of my friend Pete. I've heard them, and it's a great group of folks, and they really play well. And so I made time in my schedule to come and be with them and take them into the next chapter of their history. And so it's been really, really fun. I've had, I think, 6-7 rehearsals with them in one concert, and we're getting ready for our next concert. So it's been a real a fun thing to be a part of a group that's been in existence for 28 years. So I'm looking forward to what the next 28 will bring for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so now I'd like to go back quite a ways, go back a little bit. So what inspired you to just choose a career in music overall? Like, what made you want to be a musician?
My father was a part-time musician, and from the day I could ever remember, there was people in the house rehearsing. I'd always be, along with him on gigs and concerts. And so from the very beginning, it's something that I've always thought I would do. My mom would tell a story of, I was supposed to be in bed. She worked the night shift as a nurse, and I was supposed to already be asleep, and she'd come home from work, and I'd still be in my high chair, enjoying music with my dad. So I think music kind of picked me, but yes, that's all I've ever known. And so I've been a professional musician from the time I was 12, playing with my dad's different groups, and it's been going ever since.
Okay. All right, so then now we'll just talk a little bit about the events you have, you've done already and what you have coming up. So we're getting close to the end of the year. It's already October. So what have been the highlights this year for the jazz band?
Ooh, they've done several concerts, and two concerts in particular at the Columbia Lakefront there. And that was my first concert back in September, was one of the final concerts for the Lakefront series. We've got coming up on November 4th an evening of jazz at Christ Memorial Presbyterian Church in Columbia. That's November 4th. And then our final concert for the year is December 16th at the Howard County Historical Society in Ellicott City. That's called Music at the Museum. So those are the two things that are left for the year. Looking into 2018... we've got our first of hopefully many subscription concerts that we're going to start, and that will be that concert will be April 27th, Friday, April 27th at Slayton House, and it's going to be called April in Paris: The Music of Count Basie. Hmm. So we hope folks will mark that on their calendars and come join us for that. In between the beginning of the year, we have scheduled, hopefully, a concert at the Mid-Atlantic Jazz Festival as well. So, yeah, we're staying kind of busy.
Yeah, and we're talking about busy. I mean, I remember looking at your website. I mean, you don't only do stuff here around Howard County, but you go all around the world. I mean, you've done stuff in Europe, and I mean, that must be quite an experience.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that part of the band performance schedule. Every 2 years, the band has traveled abroad, so they've gotten, as you said, if you looked at the website, which is, by the way, thejazzband.com, you can see that the group has played at numerous different festivals, in Europe, which I think is a really cool part of what they're doing. I have been involved in conducting community organizations before, and none have had the type of wide range of performance opportunities as this group does. So that's pretty exciting.
And you talked a little bit earlier how you did a performance in collaboration with the Howard County Historical Society. So tell us a little bit about all the organization, all the other Howard County organizations that you collaborate with. Because, for example, I know how we were able to set up this interview is because you work with the Columbia Orchestra, and Jason Love was able to help me set this up.
Well, actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, because we are now, for a little over a year now, partnered with the Columbia Orchestra. So we're part of the Columbia Orchestra's umbrella of what they do and what they present to the Howard County and Columbia area. And so there's a long story involved in there, but the Columbia Jazz Band was moving away from part of an organization that they were involved with, and it just seemed like Jason and the Columbia Orchestra was an ideal fit, and we're so happy that they brought us on board and put us underneath their umbrella. Gives us an opportunity to collaborate with them, and the band has done one concert with them a couple years ago, and so we're looking forward to doing some more of that. There's talk of in June doing something like that as part of a concert series at the Chrysalis. So more to come with that one. But yes, it's an exciting time for the band to be a part of the orchestra's organization and everything that Jason and the folks do there.
All right, and you know, with all the your performances and everything you do, do you have people want to listen to you, but maybe sometimes can't make everything? Do you have music available to purchase either on CD or online for MP3 format?
Yes, if you go to the website, the Columbia. Are the jazzband.com. There are actually, you can stream some of the tunes that the band has recorded, and if you'd like to purchase the music, there is a link there on how to get a copy of the two CDs that the band has released.
And besides, you know, going to the events or, you know, purchasing the music, what are all the other ways people can help out or contribute to the Columbia Jazz Band? You know, for example, is there like any way they could like say donate instruments?
I don't know that we've ever taken any instruments, but I'm sure that we would consider that. Again, if you go to the website, thejazzband.com, and you get in touch with us that way, we'd love to talk with you and see, you know, what you have in mind. But in particular, I'd like to bring out that as a part of the Columbia Orchestra, both the Columbia Jazz Band and the Columbia Orchestra are volunteer organizations. We are community-based, and so everything that we do is through grants and funding and donations from folks. So I'd really like to encourage folks in Howard County to really go to the Columbia Orchestra's website, which is columbiaorchestra.org, and there's a tab underneath the headings there called Support. And if you donate, you click on donate, and you can donate to help the Columbia Orchestra and the Columbia Jazz Band. And if you want the funds to go to the Columbia Jazz Band, just put a little note there after you've contributed that this is for the Columbia Jazz Band. We'd appreciate it. But all of the funds that go in and support for the orchestra helps all of us. So really, between what being the newcomer here, now I'm part of the organization, but as an outsider before, I think the work that's being done by Jason and the orchestra and now the work that the jazz band is doing is just wonderful stuff for Howard County. And so any help that anybody can give us is greatly appreciated, and that's the best way to help is to click on that support and donate to the orchestra and the jazz band.
All right. And so then I'll have to ask you this question. If in the recent amount of time you've been part of the jazz band, what is the one, if you could narrow down to one thing, what is it the one thing you enjoy most about being a part of this band?
The passion and love that the folks in the organization have for the music and the camaraderie of being with each other. I, as a professional musician and dealing with the business side of it, I often tell people that I kind of play music for fun. My real business is the business of music, which can be, as you can imagine, you know,
Very time-consuming. And so mm-hmm. it reminds me when I get to be with these folks why I do this is that they really love playing music, and they're doing it because they love doing it, and they enjoy doing it together. And that is so refreshing for me, because sometimes you go on a gig and it's somebody that you've never seen before, and you got to make some music, and you've got all those dynamics, whereas these folks just come and play and have some fun, and it's great. So I'm just really honored to be a part of the organization.
All right. And then so the last question I'll have is, just is there anything I haven't covered or forgot to bring up that you want to talk about now?
No, I believe that'll be it. I would really like for everybody to mark their calendars for our concert on Friday, April 27th. I'd love to have folks come out and really support us in our first endeavor of hopefully what will be many concerts of this type. It'll be a multimedia event. We'll have some refreshments and so on and so forth. So it'll be a really nice evening of exploring and listening to the music of Count Basie. So hope everyone will mark their calendars for Friday, April 27th at Slayton House.
All right, awesome. Okay, led by Fred Hughes, the Columbia Jazz Band is in its 28th year and has performed at venues not only around Howard County but around the globe as well. I have been talking today with Fred Hughes, the jazz band's new director, to discuss everything they have for the upcoming year. Fred, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Alex, thanks so much for having me.
All right. For HOCO Journal, I'm Alex Baker, and I'll be right back on Dragon Digital Radio.
Join Mary Weeks and Chris Oviedo on Columbia Matters Radio. Learn all the Columbia Association-related news, events, and programs. Columbia Matters Radio airs every Sunday at 1:30 and Mondays at 9:30. You can take us with you by downloading the Dragon Digital Radio app on the iPhone and Android App Store or dragondigitalradio.podbean.com.
Welcome back to Howard County Journal. Matt Trudell with you. And in studio today, I have representing Ineffable Entertainment, I have Freddie Striano. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt. I'm glad you got my last name right.
Yes, yeah. We know each other,
yes,
you know.
Do.
So, and that's why I really wanted to get you in here, is because I knew, like, you and I know each other,
right?
And I like promoting good things locally, and it helps when you're promoting local things of people that you know. So, what is your title at Ineffable Entertainment?
So, you can call me, technically I'm the CEO. I run this with another graduate from the area, Orlando Goncalves. So the two of us run the company. We call ourselves CEOs, but you can call us whatever you like.
Okay. And you're both graduates of Oakland Mills, right?
Yes, we are. OG Orlando Goncalves graduated 2006, and I graduated from Oakland Mills 2010.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I also graduated from HCC as well.
Yes. Yeah, you were actually taking TV classes down here, next to our studio.
Right next door. Yeah, I was right next door. I graduated here with my associates. Believe that was 2013 I left out of here.
And did you transfer to somewhere else? Or?
Yeah, I got my bachelor's from University of Maryland, University College.
And what was your bachelor's then?
Mass communications.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that helps you with this line of work now.
Yeah, got to be able to talk, right?
So, I guess, how did Ineffable Entertainment come to be?
So we started off as a local community events company. Our intention was to bring local businesses and local charities into the community, make people more aware of it. So it actually started off having a conversation in Miami with this gentleman who told me he made money throwing bar crawls and parties. So we threw a bar crawl out in Old Ellicott City, and that's kind of the first way it started. That led to our next event at Soccer Dome, which then led to us doing charity events for Barks Animal Shelter in Baltimore. And then we got really into the flood cleanup recovery in Old Ellicott City. And it kind of just started steamrolling from there.
And I guess a lot of your business, other than booking the entertainment stuff, is networking. You got to network a lot?
Yeah, a lot of networking. Until recently, we were straight events. So a lot of our business was throwing great events at local businesses and then networking for local charities and local businesses.
And now you've branched off into, and we'll get into it later, but you've branched off into, I guess, another wing of this business?
Yeah, so we love the charity foundation side of it more, so we figured out a way to create our own foundation.
Okay.
And then that's kind of our new wing now, is funding our foundation.
Okay, all right. So how long has Ineffable Entertainment been in existence?
We are just finishing our second year.
Second year.
Yeah.
What was the process like getting started, I guess? Like, how did you go about throwing your first event?
So that was that was pretty funny. So we actually threw our first event. It was a bar called Old Ellicott City. We figured somewhere that we knew a few people. We had some connections. And me and Orlando went to every bar we wanted to throw it, and we did our own bar crawl, and we just kind of pitched our idea.
Okay.
And then from there, once we had all the bars on board, we started promoting. Obviously, we started our LLC, did everything legally, had a website up, and then we went social media because that is the cheapest and easiest way to start a company. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of word of mouth, a lot of social media, and then we had a lot of help from the bars in Old Ellicott City who... We love every single bar on that main strip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being a small business, do you find that social media is a big help, I guess?
Yes. It is. I think the common misconception is it's not the only help, but it is a huge help. You need to have it. But a lot of our success is really getting out into the community. A lot of face-to-face interactions, a lot of doing things. But social media is a great way to reach everyone and mm-hmm. show people what we've done.
So other than now branching into this wing, mm-hmm. right? So you said your first event was a bar crawl, mm-hmm. and now you have this new wing. How else has the business evolved over the 2 years?
It's been tremendous. I mean, you've touched on it with networking. We've gotten to work with... A local veterans homeless shelter in Baltimore. I'm on the committee for Barkstoberfest for Baltimore Animal Rescue Care Shelter. We got to help rebuild a few bars in Old Ellicott City. That's been the coolest part is the other entrepreneurs we've met, the other companies we've met, and then that's been the most awesome part, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So now we're gonna get into this other wing and.
Am I on camera right now? Is there going to be a camera?
No. All
right.
You just launched a Kickstarter within the past, 2 months.
Yes.
Called the Red Bow Tie Initiative.
Yes.
Which is you buy this, and it's very cool. It's this little, money clip bottle opener, and then it also is a clip-on bow tie. And you buy that. And then the money made from that helps clean up trash.
So yes, you're pretty much there. It is so we call it it's a money clip and a bottle opener. It does function as a tie if you want to wear it as a bow tie. It's in the shape of a bow tie. Each one we sell, we pick up 1 pound of trash from state parks and waterways. I guess I haven't touched on it. We have a partnership with Tapsco State Valley Park. So they help us. That's where we do most of our trail cleanups. We launched a Kickstarter. Our Kickstarter is actually over. We did not hit our goal, but that's really not a problem. Mm-hmm. We actually had enough funds to manufacture them ourselves. So we do have the bow ties, and we've already kicked off our sales. Kickstarter ended last Friday, so now we are up on our website. We do have an Etsy store. We will be in Last Place on Earth, which is a head shop down off of St. John's Lane. And we'll have a few other stores that we'll be in within the next month.
Okay.
For each one we sell, that helps fund us for our trail cleanups. We're going to use a percentage of the money to buy supplies. And then for every one we sell, we pick up a pound of trash. We're up to 91 pounds right now. 91 and a half.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I know you put a Kickstarter out, of course, hoping that you're going to reject. What did you learn from that, though?
You learn a lot. So Kickstarter is very interesting. And I mean, if you're going to run a Kickstarter, there's a lot. Don't be afraid of there's no failing on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
First thing we made a mistake on was we had a party to launch, which was awesome. We did it a Thursday night at a bar and went into midnight with a launch. You don't want to do that. You want to go early in the week, around lunchtime. That was one thing we definitely learned. Another thing we learned is that you get to keep the contacts. So if you don't hit your goal, you keep all those contacts. You can always relaunch. So okay. we're gonna relaunch. We're gonna relaunch in a few months. We're gonna get some feedback on what we have now. Go come out of version 2 and maybe go to relaunch from there. But everything you do, you learn. So, I mean, it was just little things here and there, how to get better at it. And it was a great marketing experience.
So, when you guys started the business 2 years ago, was this in the plans?
Not at all.
Okay. What was giving back to the earth in the plans at
yes,
all? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, I guess what made you decide to go from entertainment to, like, let's do this?
We still throw our events. We'll have our, well, this will be like a sneak peek. No one knows this yet. We'll have our tiki party. We'll be back in January. We'll have a field day coming into the spring. This is just another branch. Entertainment to us can be used in so many different forms. We just love the charity aspect, and we wanted to make our own charity. This came up. We actually met another local company. I'll give them a shout out, American Bully Manufacturing. We came up to them. We were going to invent our own games. And when we were inventing our own games, this idea came out, and we just loved it and ran with it. Our favorite event we threw was a trail cleanup at McKeldin. And then we had so much fun doing that that we decided to just kind of run with that. And we wanted to keep helping the environment, keep kind of get going out. And it seemed like this was the best way for us to help the community.
Okay. So how many events do you guys usually put on a year?
That's tough. Last year we were pretty high. Maybe we were like close to 6 to 8. We're going to scale down to about 4 this year.
Okay.
So aside from the bow ties, we also do team building activities, corporate parties, and we also do game rentals. We have a lot of, you know, we have giant beer pong. We've teamed up with a company that has bubble balls. So we do a lot of other things besides just the bow ties and events now. So we're going to keep about 4 large events per year to kind of keep us going on that end. And then we'll have our rentals. We'll have our team building activities and corporate parties. And then we'll also have our bow ties.
Okay. Yeah. How many people for your big events would you say you usually get?
It ranges. We're still pretty small scale, so we're not pulling in thousands. This isn't like a huge concert, but we'll be over 150, over 200 a few times. Our smaller events, we like to keep them between like 50 to 100 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing, and you kind of lightly touched on this, but I think it's important, is you are Howard County kid.
Yes.
With a mass communications degree, so yeah. Not even like a business degree. I guess what if you could give anybody some advice on, hey, I just decided to open up a small business one day. Right. Like, a lot of people get scared of doing that.
Right.
So what makes you different?
So I'm not different. I started my first business at 18 years old. I started a power washing company, LLC, everything. I went to business school for a year. Before I went to HEC, I was at a 4-year university, majored in business. I don't want to talk anyone out of taking business classes, but to me, it was a little bit of a waste. I didn't need someone to tell me how to run a business. It was just kind of like common sense. Be nice to people, offer a service that's going to be helpful, things like that. The only advice I can give anyone, and I had this conversation the other day, is you just got to do it. You're going to fail a million times. You're going to fail all the time. The key is to fail and keep going. We've taken so many pivots. We've had so many changes. Like we said, we started as a bar crawl. We then realized that we want to do more in the community. We want to do more charity work. Then it came out to doing the bow ties and then the game rentals and corporate parties. You're going to fail. Just keep going. Just have a plan. Money is not everything. You can do things without money. Time is a great substitute for money. If you want to ask me how to get funding for a small business, you may not like my answer, but I can give you an answer. There's ways to do it. If you want to get something done, you can get it done. It's not great advice. It's more like the Nike just do it kind of thing, but you just got to do it.
I'm going to partially ask this question, and I believe that you might not be able to give me a full-fledged answer because you didn't see this coming.
Right.
But where will you guys be in 5 years?
Hopefully, we will be a full-service entertainment company. We want to – so our ultimate goal has been to throw a music festival.
Okay.
So in 5 years, if we could throw a local music festival, we want to do everything local.
Mm-hmm.
Our bow ties are made in Annapolis Junction, Maryland. All the companies we partner with are in Maryland. The state parks we work with are in Maryland right now. Hopefully we'll branch out. But if we could throw a local music festival, get some local bands together, that would be awesome. But, in 5 years, hopefully we'll be synonymous with entertainment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Old Ellicott City would be a good place to have a music festival.
Yes, it
would. You guys got some connections down there, so.
Yeah, we've spread out to, so we work in primarily Howard County, Baltimore County, and Anne Arundel County. Is where we are right now. We've done events in Annapolis. We've done events in the city. We'll be at El Buffalo next week. December 23rd at El Buffalo. We're having our holiday party. We rented out the bar. We bought some free food for everybody. There's no cover. You can come in and just kind of hang out. We have our trail cleanup on December 16th coming up. So that'll be our next volunteer day. But yeah, we have some ideas. We have some ideas.
So about the trail day. So I was reading on your website that you're only allowed to have 10 volunteers.
We only want 10 volunteers for this one. Usually we keep the trail cleanups at 10 to 15 people.
Okay.
That is for safety reasons. You're always welcome to come out and hang out. Mm-hmm. We always do happy hours after. Our trail cleanup on the 16th, we're going to be close to a road.
Okay.
We don't want to put anyone in danger.
Okay.
We have so many vests. We have so many waivers. And it is hard to keep track of, a lot of people.
Now,
if we have people that want to get involved and want to reach out to us, we could always use more crew leaders, and that'll help us expand our number of volunteers.
That was exactly going into my next question. So
yes.
That's awesome. How often do you guys go and do these little trail cleanups?
So our first one started the idea for the bow ties.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our second cleanup. We're going to hopefully do them once a month, weather permitting, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But once a month's the goal. If people really buy the bow ties, we'll have to get out there a little bit more.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll be able to buy some gators soon and some four-wheelers to go pick up some big stuff, because we found some water heaters, some sinks. There's a lot of heavy stuff out there.
I believe it.
Yeah, so we want to be able to get some equipment to buy some to do some more work.
All right. Well, where can people learn more about you guys?
Well, thank you for asking. You can find us on our website. It's aneffent.com, aneffent.com. You can also find us by searching Ineffable Entertainment. Ineffable. You can find that on Facebook, on Instagram, even on Twitter. We have a store on Etsy that you can find our bow ties. And then if you're ever on St. John's Lane off of 40, you can go to Last Place on Earth, and we'll have a display over there with our bow ties soon. And then hopefully the next coming weeks we'll be at a few other stores as well.
How's Etsy? And I know that was supposed to be my last question, but
well,
then
fine.
I got the Etsy question. How does Etsy help you? Like,
we just started it, actually. We just put it on Etsy. People love Etsy. We
love it.
People love Etsy. So we went on there to just kind of expand our reach. I'm a big believer in kind of spreading out as much as we can without killing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We will be on Amazon in a few weeks as well. These make great stocking stuffers, and you could help us pick up some more trash. But Etsy, I'll have a better answer for you in a couple weeks, but it seems like it could be very helpful.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in today, talking about the Red Bowtie Initiative and Ineffable Entertainment. This has been Freddie Striano.
Thank you so much, Matt. I'm glad I was able to make it out.
And we'll be right back on HOCO Journal.
Russell Wilson here. With Play 60, United Way and the NFL are helping kids play at least 60 minutes a day.
Healthy kids!
To get involved, go to unitedway.org/play60.
Donate!
Are you guys going to do that every time?
Yes, of course!
Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And that's it for our show today. Thanks to our producers and guests, not only for taking the time to speak with us, but also for helping us celebrate life and this new year with music, entrepreneurship and giving, and great literature. Don't forget to connect with us through social media. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Just search for Dragon Digital Radio. Also, check out our podcast page where you can find this episode of Hoka Journal and share it with your friends and family. We are dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And if you would like to come in and share your story, you can contact me, Chris Oviedo, at moviedo@howardcc.edu, or you can connect with me via Facebook at my personal page, Chris Oviedo. 2018 is an open book that brings 365 pages for us to write our story. Let's make it the best one yet. Until next time, I am Chris Oviedo.